Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail. Woo! And the super athlete-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps. You got this. And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable blade knives, fixed blade knives, and game processing kits. Now, we've all been there before, trying to field dress your wild game with a dull knife. This is where Outdoor Edge really steps in. With the Razor Safe system, you can have a brand new razor sharp blade with just the push of a button. No more dull blades and no more problems processing your wild game. To check out all of the products from Outdoor Edge, visit OutdoorEdge.com. And at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30, that's NATION30, for 30% off of your purchase.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you. Alrighty, guys, welcome back to another Land and Legacy podcast. Rolling down the road, Matt's here.
Yeah,
Adam's here.
I always feel weird saying it. You know, we just recorded an hour ago the other one, and it's like, hey, guys, I'm here again.
Yeah.
But I don't know which one they're going to listen to first, and they may not even listen to both podcasts.
Or certainly not the exact same time, one right after another. That'd be a lot of us in their ear.
Well, there's a lot of guys that say that the two, they wish there was more, and I'm like, gah, I wish there was less.
This is you know, it's a great, great opportunity to be able to have this long format discussion, because a lot of what we do talk about is weighty. It's not just this short tip that can be shared and move on. Like, it does need some elaboration. It can be complex, or it can be a lot of variables thrown into situations. So it is a blessing. But at the same time,
I think of it like this.
It's 2 hours.
The long format, time. Doing 2 podcasts a week. If somebody were to walk into me and I and let's just say I was strictly a cattle farmer, strictly a doctor, and I hunted a little bit, and a guy said, "Hey, plant clover. It's the best thing. You'll shoot more deer." I'd probably say, because this is my personality, I'd say, I have so many questions.
Yeah.
And I would say,
one
why?
Thing leads to
okay,
another.
Okay, let's unpack that. Why, how, when,
in what
where?
Situations? Yes.
And
yes.
And I would want to know why you said that.
Yep.
Rather than just say, okay.
And then just take it and accept it.
Let's go plant clover. Like,
yep.
And so that's where, like, for us, we get that opportunity. And we get repetitive sometimes because it needs to be really unpacked in different ways,
or
different times of the year, circle back.
Yep.
Yeah, all those things. So, you know, for us, I enjoy it. But sometimes it does feel like, and I can understand why the preacher sometimes would be like, I feel like I just covered this.
Didn't we just talk about sin last week?
Didn't I just talk about
redemption?
I felt
and
like
grace?
I mentioned
prayer?
Matthew chapter 24 or Matthew yeah. whenever, just last year.
Yep.
Did I do that? Yeah, you probably did. But that's the great thing. It
doesn't get old.
It doesn't get old. Whoa, there we go.
Where's your phone going off?
My
Oops.
Phone going off. I had it on silent, and that's a client calling to check in.
Nice.
And. Thanks, Joe. Thanks for interrupting the podcast. Appreciate it.
Shout out to Joe.
No, he listens, I think, every week, so he'll get a kick out of that. But, yeah, anyway.
But you know what doesn't get old? Shooting big deer.
You know what else doesn't get old?
What's that?
Laying out a plan and doing it. Targeting a deer and doing it.
Yeah, no doubt.
And
that's just like the pinnacle.
To me, there's, you know, as you grow up, there's this, like, I don't care. Big deer is a big deer. Any big deer is great, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. I don't care who he is,
he
is, where he came from. I'm just glad I got him.
Yep.
And as I've gotten older and landowner, it's like, you know, we get invites to go hunt with clients, and that's all great. Time doesn't allow for us to do it nearly as much as we would like. But at the end of the day, too, a part of it is that I don't really want to go shoot your big deer.
Like, right.
I don't really see the need to go and hunt because I have no story with you. Now,
there's
yes, that's fun, but a big part, and this week's podcast, you'll be able to confirm this or disagree with me. Each is fine, but I like hunting deer that I've targeted with my habitat techniques and my layout and going, okay, this, and that's the deer I want. And then when it comes all together, I'm like, that's the pinnacle.
Yeah, and as we talk about this week more, there's a unique relationship here to where I went and the farms that we are working. So it's like this.
This wasn't just a loss. Or this just wasn't like the,
random
I'm just going to show up and shoot. I'm not a hired gun here.
Right, right. And I'd like, what makes deer hunting fun and memorable and impactful is that connection. Connection to a property, connection to an animal, connection to the relationships and friends that you have, that you make, your family, and those who you get to share that experience with. That is why we do what we do and why we enjoy it. And the more that you can build into that story and this memory increases and elevates that experience.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, yeah, I totally agree that if it's just not as sweet as a let's say you're hunting your own property and a random buck that you have no idea who it is, but it meets the criteria that you're shooting for comes in.
Yeah.
And you whack him. Great. Awesome. but you might not get the exact same connection out of, you know, maybe a deer you've been watching grow for 3 years. Yeah. And it's like, there just is a little bit of a difference. Yeah. No harm, no foul, but there
is a
difference.
It's great to have both. It is great to have both. Yeah. Like, we talk about boundary birds or boundary bucks.
Yeah.
Versus
yeah.
homebodies.
Seth killed a boundary buck this year. He had no idea who it was. He was like, I'm trying to age this deer. I'm trying to look at him, like, estimate, is that what I want to shoot? And I don't know him at all. And yeah. shoots a deer, and it was what we would call a boundary deer. Very little information, if any, at all. And he met the criteria, so he got whacked. But yeah. it wasn't one that he was chasing. But sure, you're going to take that opportunity that's right there in yeah. front of you.
Yeah, the criteria for boundary bucks is a little different than the criteria for
sure.
home bodies.
Sure.
But you know, that's the enjoyment of hunting is you know, not only those long plays or those long term planning, but also that short and short term planning as well as the quick instinct
yes.
planning, where you get to do all those things. And,
yeah.
and that's fun. Like, sometimes those quick instincts ones are the ones that are like, yeah! And then there's the other side of that where it's like, uh-oh, I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. You can immediately – well, it's funny because in this story you'll hear much of, like, both sides of those.
Yeah.
So it's just a unique situation. So let's before we jump in, I know we need to hit OnX Maps. OnX Maps is a partner of Land and Legacy, and it's one tool that we use constantly, daily, for our recommendations. Actually, this morning early, I sent out, marked out betting tickets and sent them to one of our clients to start implementing on. This is the next phase of the project for him, and here's
the
priority.
Two nights ago for me, I did that with a guy. I'm ready to cut this weekend. I was like, these right here, bomb, bomb, bomb.
Yep.
Go cut those.
Those three. When you're done, come back. I'll give you more work.
Yeah.
But the ability for user-friendly sharing of information, project management, task-type software, amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I mean, when it comes to tools we use, this is right at the top of the list. It's in the top three for sure to make us have the ability to do our job appropriately.
And remotely, too.
Yeah.
Like, we can only be on site so many times out of a given year, or just hours within a year. And so this ability to communicate specifically what you're trying to share with a landowner, it solves a lot of different pain points.
No
and
doubt.
For even if you're not in our position, you're sharing that information, having that information to share with your buddies, or just analyze and plan for yourself,
yeah,
bar none, worth it. Get it. Use code Land and Legacy 20 to get 20% off discount code for OnX subscriptions.
Yep.
Woo. We got a fun story to share this week.
You do. I haven't even heard the story yet. You
got some parts of it. We hinted around last week on the podcast that I was headed to deer hunt and work in Iowa. We left out the Iowa standpoint, but I think a lot of people probably got the clues and put it all together. But specifically,
the clues,
Western Iowa.
Well, I think I laughed because you were like, I'm not, you know, when we said, yeah, we're not going to let the cat out of the bag. And it was like, I noticed on the Instagram story, I started getting messages.
Oh.
And I was like, I think in my head, you drove straight there, and it was like, zoot, pan. Welcome to Iowa, baby, or whatever. And it was like, oh, he didn't hide that very long.
Nope. Nope. I was feeling optimistic that hopefully there would be a story like this to be able to share. But it was a beautiful, beautiful setting. So let's kind of start back at how we've gotten here. Several years ago, we had a gentleman named Brenton email in and talk about consulting and working at some properties in Western Iowa that he had and his family had, and that relationship has developed and there is a group of landowners who work together and with Land and Legacy to purchase farms and put together management plans for those farms and then implement the plan and put that farm back out for sale as a more turnkey type property with improved habitat story, where a family can come in, purchase that farm and see the improvements and take advantage of that hard work. So they're ready to go. And so through the process, of course, been up there multiple times there, you know, lots of conversations, got to know them very well. And this fall there were, or late summer, fall, there were several, new farm purchases in that area that increased the opportunity for hunting various farms, not pressuring and getting some inventory of, okay, who's here, what's on this farm. And so, there is a farm that you'll hear more about. We've talked about on several podcasts, Burr Oaks. That farm is going to be available this coming year. And so, there was that farm, 137 acre farm, and then 122 acre farm, all together in this general, region of Western Iowa in zone 3. And so, basically with that, an invitation to come up and hunt during a shotgun, was given to us. And so I took him up on the opportunity, and here we are going to Iowa, second shotgun season, and was able to purchase a over-the-counter doe tag, and due to their graciousness and generosity, party hunt with them on the farm and utilize buck tag. And so that's a unique situation in Iowa, but one that certainly took advantage of, especially in a situation like this. And so basically went up, watching weather, and the game plan was most of these farms had been planted, had corn. And specifically the property, the 137, it just is, like when you get to the property, it's like, okay, here's a phenomenal setup. Like this property is, it's like a naturally gifted athlete. You're like, okay, regardless, this one is just set up well. Like it's got some sweet foundational habitat pieces that are just like woven into this property. And that one obviously caught our eye, and then placing cameras out on it, it quickly realized, wow, this thing has got some beasts. Like there are some big deer on this place already. Not a surprise, this portion of Iowa doesn't get the recognition, the fame that other portions do, but not because big deer aren't there. And they're definitely there on this 137. So we knew going into the week that was probably going to be a higher targeted farm because of what was on that place. And so anyhow, that place had corn, and it was harvested really late, like very last part of November and into December. So we had left some standing grain in these set locations, and basically due to the amount of corn and the recent harvest, we're like, standing grain's gonna be good. Some was brush hogged down, but it may not be as impactful as if they had harvested it in late October and all the other spilled grain had been already consumed out of the area. So we knew going into it that weather wasn't going to be perfect. It wasn't going to be that cold, cold setting that you kind of dream of, but there was snow on the ground, and that was helpful going into the week, and then it began to melt off. But regardless, that's kind of the scenario. Hunt standing grain. And then additionally, we had some work that we needed to do, some habitat work, chainsawing that we're going to kind of be balancing out, picking the right days and times to hunt throughout this week. But on the 137, there was four deer that were of age that were, had been showing up different times throughout the fall. And, it was like, okay, if any of these things pop out, we're good and confident that there are 4.5 at least and older that we can kill them, and you know, not they're a representative of the area, like they're a good candidate, and also had doe tags. But as it all goes, don't want to put too much pressure on the place early on into a shorter trip. And so we didn't take does the first day that we had some opportunities at. But then we get into the second day, and I was specifically selected a blind to hunt, and we had a south wind, which so some of the setups were more for favoring a west-northwest wind. But this one blind in particular absolutely can easily hunt it on a south wind. It kind of is on the point of an L-shaped field, so you get to look down both ways. And being warmer that afternoon, I mean, I'm not in any bibs. I don't even have a jacket
on. There was
on.
Still snow on the ground in
it
places.
It was still snow, yes. Yes.
So I understand you're on the 137.
Yep.
With some snow on the ground.
Some
like,
snow.
It looked like
more,
the north
at this
slopes,
point,
east slopes had
yes.
snow.
At this point, it was really just restricted to north slopes and east slopes due to 50, 55 degree temps.
Yeah.
But it had snowed the Friday, Thursday, Friday beforehand. So they were coming out of snow, and it made for glassing really easy and seeing movement in wooded areas. You could pick deer off really pretty easily. And so I got in the blind and was there. Really slow evening. I mean, this field and nights previously in early different portions of the hunting season from Brenton and his family, you know, they had seen 20, 30 deer in the field. Mm. Easy. So I was like, you're going to see deer. They're going to be there. But I wasn't seeing them. Like, it got to be 4:30, and I hadn't seen a deer in the field yet. I was like, wow, man, this is just a slow, slow evening.
Yeah.
But then about 4:35, I look, and out of the very back corner of the field is two does pop out, and I see legs in the background coming out into the field as well. And this is 300 yards away.
Yeah.
And so, of course, we're using straight wall cartridges, the Winchester 350 Legend. And it's like, yeah, that's not a shot, obviously,
yeah.
going to be taking.
Yeah.
But here comes two bucks. One was, I believe, a 3.5-year-old 10-pointer. Broad daylight, comes out, stays in the back of the field. And that's pretty typical from what they have been seeing, is deer coming out feeding and going back in and then coming right back out, or coming out of that corner, eating a little bit, jumping in the timber, working their way down farther out and into the field, and coming with more within range. And so we're just watching them. I was like, man, that's a really nice young deer. And here comes another one that I think I didn't get as good of a look at that one. But another 10-pointer with some stickers coming off the bases. And it's like, man, those are beautiful, beautiful bucks. But they come out in the field, 5-minute encounter, go back in. I'm like, okay, there's still 40-so minutes before dark. And those deer go back in. Nothing comes out. And it's like, they're, I don't know, another probably 30 minutes of no deer in the field. Which is like, man, what in the world? The wind was great. I'm sitting there thinking, man, it's just the warmer weather. There has been a little bit of pressure on the farm, but I don't think it's enough to keep deer out of the field. Same corner, here come two. We got about 10, 15 minutes left. So I'm looking at two deer in the field. And I could, the field itself is probably 15 acres.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, it's a big field. Like, I ought to be able to see, like I said, expecting 20 to 30 to pile in there. And it's very secluded. Like, you know, it's in the center of this farm, but this farm, just the way these hills and the Les Hills work, man, it is like, it's almost like a stadium kind of in there, just very high peaks.
Yeah, like an amphitheater.
Yeah, it really is. So, like, deer ought to feel very comfortable in there. So anyhow, I'm just like, man, this is kind of a little bit of a bummer. But as hunting goes, 5 minutes before dark, starts to change. And so I'm glassing, and it's getting dark. And to my right, the other side of the field, here comes a group of four does. And boom, they come off the slope right down to the field, start eating. I'm like, okay, great, but I have very, like, we're winding down fast on any opportunities. The other bucks and does, they never came back out. I'm saying, well, okay, thinking and making game plans for tomorrow. I look back to my left, see those two. Nothing else came out on that side. I turn back to the other side of the field. Now there's five deer. And I'm like, wait a second. Who's that? And I just had walked out of the timber, put the binos up, and now we got like 3 minutes left, 2 minutes left maybe, when I first see this thing. And I put the binos up and immediately can see much bigger body, mature deer, but with low light condition. And even looking through binos, head down in a cut cornfield with, you know, corn stalks are a foot and a half tall, that little bit of light and a little bit of shine off those corn stalks, like, I don't know which deer that is. I mean, I really have no clue, but it's mature deer. So I actually have to switch which seat and everything I'm in and move the camera around and get situated, zoom in, and it's like there's no light. There's just zero light in the camera. I'm like, son of a gun. So I'm looking at it, put the binos back up. I'm like, there's a 3.5-year-old that it's a beautiful 10-pointer, but he broke off like his beam right about his brow tine. And I'm like, okay, we need to make sure that that is not that deer, and that I would hate to make that mistake, right? Especially going into this farm. Here's an amazing invite. I don't obviously want to shoot a 3.5-year-old 10-pointer with a broken beam who's going to be very studly next year and years to come.
That's the easiest way to never get invited back.
Right? So I'm like, okay, just make sure he's got both sides. He's mature. And there were several, like, heavier, more mature deer. And I could start seeing glimpses and more detail of the antlers. I'm like, okay, he's heavy. He's tall. It's either this deer or that deer. So in my head, I've narrowed down that's not the 10. But as soon as, he walks out, he's 5-6 yards off the edge of the field and head down. And then very similar to the other deer, he picks his head up. He turns around and starts heading back into the timber. And luckily on this portion of the field, there is snow right along the edge of the timber. And so when he had turned around and started to walk back up this hill, there's white background behind him. And I could see, boom, clearly, okay, he has both sides, no doubt. But now I've got like 1 minute left to make this thing happen. So it was a split second. That's a shooter. He's mature. I'm either going to take this shot or I'm done for the evening. And the next day, we're forecasted for, well, if anyone's been paying attention to the Midwest, they saw bad tornadoes, extremely high winds, 70 degrees during December, and then dropping down to 20 that night. So, like, this crazy weird weather. And I was like, it's kind of a now or never situation because we weren't even going to be hunting the next day due to that. So, anyhow, I bleated. The buck stops, turns, kind of quartering away, and I'm not even going to say I really settled. I made a rush shot, and because now his head is, like, going into the timber, and just rushed a shot. I did not hear the bullet hit that deer, and I'm like, you dumb. Like, here's your shot. Here's your opportunity, and I think you just whiffed, but it's... As soon as that happened, the deer 180s, God just redirected him, sent him back into the field, and comes out into the field where there is more light. And I jack another shell in, and now he's quartering to me and squeeze the trigger. He's at about 180, 190. And on the Vortex scope, it's got, you know, the different reticles I had sighted in. And I had one, the second reticle was right at 170 with the Deer Season XP, the 350 Legend round. And felt confident, settled it, squeezed it, and heard it hit and make contact. And I was like, okay, sweet, thank goodness. And the deer staggers. I don't think it did a rear kick, but it kind of like almost reared up on its front legs a little bit and held its shoulder, because I hit right on the point of that leading shoulder being quartering two.
That's what and that doe did that I shot. Like, it was
really
like,
yeah, it's like reared up.
Yeah.
And kind of just like took 4 or 5 quick steps and wobble fell right over. So I'm like, oh my gosh, thank goodness. But I had a second where I was like, Matt, what would happen if you shot, you know, your first shot where you missed and you whiffed and you blew that opportunity? What happens if there was a second deer in the field and that's the one that came out and the one that you shot at? Was it, we're talking, maybe, are we talking two different deer now? So yeah. I have like this little internal freak out mode where I'm like, oh my gosh, what if that's not the same deer that I saw? And so,
and you remember the advice I gave you.
That don't screw this up.
That would have been total.
I actually had one listener, Dan Adams from Maryland. He goes, wow, Adam really just tried to jinx you on last week's podcast.
Don't mess it up.
I was like, yep. Well, yeah. And so I'm thinking like, oh man, this could be bad.
Yeah.
But I knew following up that second shot, I was like, okay, it like body wise and shape and the frame, even though it wasn't perfectly crystal clear of antler wise, it was like, it was a mature deer. So figure out the rest when we ground check that joker. And we get up there to it, and sure enough, it is one deer. We didn't have a name for it because it was one of the bucks that was honestly random on the farm. I think we had 3 pictures of that deer throughout the whole fall on the cuddy links, and then a couple other non-cuddy cameras. So he was not frequent at all, but has a split G2 on his right side, a split G3 on the left side. Fantastic brow tines, heavy mass, and just a great deer. So the pictures on Instagram, it was down to the wire. Had to make a quick decision of take advantage of Iowa, what it has to offer, or go home. And
here's a question.
Made the decision.
Because it sounds like he was at the edge of the timber.
Yeah.
Without snow, would you have been able to shoot him?
Without snow right then, I wouldn't have shot.
No.
Because it gave the confidence, okay, that deer, one, has both sides, but then he was perfectly silhouetted against the snow. I was like, okay, well, yeah. Because, you know, as he's going up into the timber, that's the darkest side of the field.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, boy. No, so right. I mean, there was, I told someone, I was like, you know, it was kind of one of those right place, right times, like just very fortunate that it came together. It was not one of those like, oh, here's all this skill and this forethought, this great strategy that this deer comes by chasing downwind, you know, blah, blah. No, it was not that at all. I mean,
yeah.
and it was like, Matt, you just almost botched this thing, but still were able to make a good follow-up shot and put the deer down. But it was almost like, here's this flash, here's this moment. And, you know, it kind of honestly reminded me that there's some deer hunts where, man, you have this long encounter where there's this animal and it's presenting a shot. And, you know, you have all this time to make these decisions and do, you know, hit all your check boxes and whatnot. And then other times you have a hunt where it's just the complete opposite.
Yeah.
You have to make a split second decision of, here's an opportunity. I'm either going to take advantage of it or I'm not. And honestly, one of the things that I was talking with Brenton's dad about was just, one, knowing the capabilities of your equipment and what you feel comfortable doing. He's more of a new hunter, and you know, I think he missed it. He missed a doe earlier in the week, and was just kind of going through that thought process of, you know, trying to make sure you know, he had done all the things right and this situation. Like, you know, sometimes, you know, hunting's not going to be this perfect scenario where you have minutes to watch and do all this. Sometimes you just need to be confident in what you see and then know the limits of your equipment, but what you can do with your equipment. And if I hadn't been shooting ahead of time and known, dialed in to what this yardage was for this caliber and the performance that it would do, then I wouldn't have taken the shot.
And was the first shot a miss?
First shot was a clean miss.
Clean miss. Huh?
Clean miss. Yep. So I was like, I look back and I talk about
like
it and share the hunt.
Sounds like divine intervention.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no questions about it. I was like, nope, that is the deer for you. And so
well, I'm
gave
saying
a perfect
that with,
opportunity.
There's a little bit of snow, so you can get confirmation.
Oh, yeah.
And then you miss, but the deer turns and runs.
Like, what?
And,
how does that
that's probably a product of, you know, growing up in terrain similar to what that is up there in the Lus Hills, where it's steep little narrow valleys. There's some really weird sound way it sounds. So he probably heard the sound up the valley.
I guarantee you that the sound, the way it went across the valley, because I kind of shot across the valley,
yeah,
it echoed, and he caught the sound of that, the shot coming basically from the direction he was turning and going back into the timber. It hit that hillside, came back to him, and that spun him around and got him back in the field. Because there was those other deer that were in the field, and they did the same thing. They didn't run out of the field after the first shot.
Yeah.
What they did was turn and look basically to the east, and I was shooting southeast.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, just the way those hills worked and the sound waves bouncing back, again, perfect scenario for God to show himself and say, hey, here's my grace on this situation.
No doubt.
Was able to make that follow-up shot and – just again, extremely grateful for their generosity, allowing me to come up and hunt with them. And so that was awesome opportunity to share that with them. But it's further example of like how
I've been kind of quiet on this podcast because I'm trying to navigate, and I for the last 45 minutes going, where am I?
Oh gosh!
And I'm
I feel
like
this is Dumb and Dumber.
At my phone going, I have never gone this way.
I thought we were going north for a good ways.
No, like,
are we still on track?
Yeah, we're still on track. Right. And that little half turn I made back there was me correcting. When I looked at this, I'm like, I know why I've never gone this way, because I've never shot east and gone this way navigating as much as more just north. Going northeast. So.
I usually don't cross the river here.
No,
I was either south on 44 or farther north. So it's like this from this stretch on, it's new.
It is. So. Anyway, but not to distract us, but that's why people are probably like, "What's Adam? Like, he's on his phone again." Nope, I've been trying to navigate
but for a needed, necessary reason.
What is happening here? I've never been through this town, so.
But yes, that was. An awesome opportunity, and hopefully, I know there'll be more to come from those farms, and that was the fun part. I was able to go and visit the farm just after it closed, tour it, and begin that consultation process of developing a plan. But you know, what was really neat is to be able to for a couple sits take in the information. There's a bald eagle. Take in the information that we were seeing from the way deer moving, and it made me that much more excited for seeing that plan come together.
Yeah.
I was like, it's a good farm. It's naturally a really good farm. One issue is some access to, honestly, one of the most secluded back 5-acre field that I've seen in a long time. Like, middle of nowhere, zero access from anybody else. Like, it's like, whoa, that's going to be special. But how do we make that an asset instead of a liability from an access standpoint? So designing where deer are going to be spending most of their time during the day, from bedding thickets and taking, what was bald prairie slopes in the 20s and 30s, we went back and looked at historical information, it was just completely bald. No trees on this place whatsoever, except for a few little scattered bur oaks.
Down in the valley.
Kind of in the ravines, so yeah, the creases, the folds, yep,
yeah,
of the hills. And so, I mean, it was 90% open. So to see it change, and then to know that we're going to be going back in and cutting, thinning, removing the smooth brome that got seeded on some of those slopes or some portion of those slopes, and where that's at in relation to some of the deer patterns and travel that routes that we saw frequent, man, it's going to be lights out. I mean, it is going to be an amazing 137 acres, and super easy to just be successful year in and year out there. So that one's going to be a very, very special farm to see develop, and great neighborhood, lots of deer, and lots of big deer.
Mm.
And this was my biggest deer yet so far, too. And so that was definitely one for memories.
Oh, what did he end up scoring?
160.5.
Very nice.
So he had a broken main beam, and it had a G4, on one side that he wasn't going to be much, maybe an inch or two. I think it was just kind of a split on the end of the main beam.
How much
that
of the
was
main
broken
beam
off.
Is missing?
Two? Two gotcha. Or 3 inches?
So what
like
that beam end up scoring? Or what was the
17 and three quarters.
So it would have been like 19.
Yeah. The other one was 21.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, it probably was a mid-160s deer. But that regardless, beautiful, beautiful, dark antlered, big body, mature deer. And that was an awesome, awesome buck. So, next year, you're up to bat.
Possibly. Possibly.
You can't make that plan this far in advance.
Possibly.
But it's on the radar.
Next year I'll have three under four.
You need a nanny.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
That's why, like, when we talked about going to Iowa this year, you were like, you want to go? I was like.
Well, of course I want to, but realistically,
no,
reality.
I shouldn't.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, in our life right now, not only is Land and Legacy very busy, but we're busy with real estate as well, but also
trying
to plan out. You know, you would love to just be like, yeah, let's go do it. But in my head, like, I want to get things in place and then enjoy this stuff and then enjoy those hunts. And right now it's like
there's just,
you know,
a lot
right
of irons
around
in
the
fire.
Holidays. Yep. I better not go. So.
Well, and as soon as I left town, I knew it was going to happen just based on some phone calls.
And that's one of the biggest reasons, like, when we both leave on trips,
not good.
It's usually not good, especially not for week long trips.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like
it's
at least
good.
One of us being home, we can, you know, if your wife
put
needs
some
something,
fires
I can help. Or if I'm gone and my wife needs something, you can help.
Mm-hmm.
When we're both gone, it's like that especially on a hunting trip.
Yeah, exactly. When we don't have to put that stress on it. Year end wrapping up stuff, and then I was on my phone. What seemed like constantly, with real, I was just like, whoa, this trip was, it was 100% a work trip, the way it turned into it. But again, very grateful. They're extremely generous group, and want to thank them for the opportunity, and we just appreciate the ability to work with them and their passion for land ownership, land stewardship, and doing it in a site like the Les Hills. Adam, you and I have talked about when discuss the other property, Burr Oaks, Bluff, and the turnaround, the rare plant communities that are coming back as a response to working and doing these practices in the Les Hills, plus seeing the wildlife respond, man, it's just awesome. Saw a covey of quail on this place too.
Oh, that's cool.
While you're there, so just, I mean, one after another. From an opportunity standpoint of that, this property, this region is extremely responsive to these techniques.
Yeah.
And that's those are really fun areas.
Because it's not that far off from historical landscape. That's the thing.
Right.
It's like just a little bit of work and you can see the plant response explode. When other places, it's been used, abused, neglected for so long that sometimes you may have to bring the seed back. You may have to replant prairies or native, diverse native areas.
You're looking for like an indicator plant.
Yeah.
Here, we're looking at plant communities that are native and in their natural form.
It's a 180.
Yeah,
you have basically areas where you're looking for an indicator plant. And then you go to areas like this where you're looking for the plants that need to be removed.
Because there's so much good.
Because there's so much good. The foundation is good, and you got to remove the little bad, when in other places the foundation is bad, and you're trying to save the little bit of good.
Correct. We're trying to bring it back.
That's why places like Oklahoma and parts of Texas and Kansas and even parts of Missouri, and in each state there's a place that's like, oh, yeah, that's pretty great. You just have to look a little harder. It seems like the more east you go, because the amount of invasive species that are dominating
the
that
amount
area.
Of
urbanization.
The amount of the landscape has changed from, you know, and again, it's a good reminder from like the Southeast Grasslands Initiative. If you're not familiar with them, go check them out. But just the way that landscape has changed, we're talking prairies now into vast pine plantations like it's a forestry dominated community versus what was historically a grassland.
Yeah.
Like that's obviously a big change. We're ways off from the way it naturally was operating, but not the case in this portion of the country, especially on this parcel itself. So it's going to be a fun project to continue working on developing. We'll be back up later this spring and bring you some more information there. But any other thing you want to cover this week?
Yeah, I'd say follow along. I hope that people are following along in this project, because this little hot spot of farm flipping, if you will, is really kind of turning into something really cool, because we get to see the process in a really cool part of the state that's kind of underutilized or not as broadcasted or
has
eyeballs on it.
Every opportunity it actually has more opportunity, quite frankly. Yeah. It has way more opportunity than other portions of the state.
And frankly, because the terrain is kept it from some of the other things that are happening across that state, or across the region. So I hope people enjoy it. I know they do. We get a lot of great feedback on it. And, they'll see plenty more hunts coming from Iowa in the future. So
that's right.
Anyway, guys, we appreciate you listening. And
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. And we'll catch you next week.
See ya. Yep.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.